This episode is brought to you by Honda. When you test drive the new Prologue EV, there's a lot that could impress you about it. There's the class-leading passenger space, the clean, thoughtful design, and the intuitive technology. But out of everything, what you'll really love most is that it's a Honda. Visit Honda.com/EV to see offers.
Yes, it is Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, but no Amber Wilson, no Ian Fitzsimmons tonight. It's Maria Marino and Marcel-Louis Jacques filling in for those two. And fascinating article dropped this morning on ESPN all about the Eagles. The Eagles looking to bridge the Nick Sirianni-Jalen Hurts divide. And one of the authors of that article, along with Jeremy Fowler, is Tim McManus, ESPN Eagles reporter, joining us now. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Busy day.
Yeah, very busy day. I would imagine so. Well, look, before we kind of get into where we are right now, let's talk a little bit about how we got here, because, you know, you sort of detailed this disconnect between Sirianni and Hurts last season, which, you know, clearly there was something going on, the way that the team sort of collapsed at the end of the season. But what would you say was the source of that disconnect?
It was the difference in offensive vision. So Sirianni coming off of the Super Bowl year, remember they had that highly successful year. They get to the biggest game against the Kansas City Chiefs, go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. And so Sirianni's inclination was to keep everything kind of status quo, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Meanwhile, Hurts is coming off a near MVP campaign. He had just gotten paid $250 million, wanted to assume more control of the offense, and him and then offensive coordinator Brian Johnson wanted to evolve the offense more and have it become more multiple. And so there was a difference of creative opinions there on which direction to take the offense. And you could see that each of those guys, and Sirianni and Hurts, kind of went to their respective corners more, and their grips got tighter as things started to go downhill towards the end of the season, where now Sirianni was not including Brian Johnson quite as much in the offensive collaboration, according to sources that we spoke with, and was holding more one-on-one meetings with Hurts. And meanwhile, Hurts is trying to take more control on his own. And actually what we learned through the reporting is that there was times where he was instructing some of his playmakers to do things that weren't part of the game plan. And there was a specific example in a critical game against Seattle late in the season where they needed an intermediate gain. Hurts called something else out for A.J. Brown. A deep pass gets intercepted, game over. And so that was just one of the examples in which they weren't on the same page.
Now, Tim, obviously, man, if you're not growing, you're dying in the NFL. It's so hard to just run into the next season with the same exact plan. But in Sirianni's case, the micromanaging, like, is this just his personality to want to kind of dip his hand into every bag possible, into every room, every position group? Or is this a case of a first-time NFL head coach kind of not knowing when to delegate certain tasks?
So I think a lot of it is circumstantial here, where he was originally paired with Shane Steichen as his offensive coordinator, and they had more of a shared history. And, you know, that all worked. And then they had the Super Bowl success, and Steichen goes on to become the head coach of the Colts. And then Sirianni doesn't have as much of a history with Brian Johnson. And I'm sure Sirianni's, you know, feeling great about himself and the offense that he helped implement here. And so that's where I think things got a little bit out of whack is, you know, success in the NFL is not always the easiest thing. And I think that a lot of people start feeling like they should have a little bit more power and a little bit more control, and maybe the ego grows a little bit. And that could apply to, you know, multiple people in the organization, including the quarterback and the head coach in that instance. But what we've seen now is that Sirianni has decided to hand things off offensively to the new offensive coordinator and Kellen Moore. He's taken a step back. He's not as involved with Hurts or with the offense. He's assumed more of a CEO type role where he's focusing on culture building and relationships and messaging, and hoping that that's the right recipe for 2024.
Talking with Tim McManus, ESPN Eagles reporter, here on Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio. Okay, so you talk about bringing in Kellen Moore, made a number of changes the Eagles did to the coaching staff. Also, Nick Sirianni did address the team you detailed in your article and took responsibility for things. Do you think they've done enough to mend this thing and be able to really thrive moving forward?
No, that's honestly, that's the big question heading into the season, because we know that adversity is going to come. It happens, of course, in every NFL season for every team across the NFL. Things are intensified in a market like Philadelphia, and there's going to be times where people are all going to be looking down and seeing at that relationship between the quarterback and the head coach, and, you know, can it sustain? But we have seen them, what they hope is set themselves up for success and bringing more in. And there's some new things that he has brought to the table that seems to be working, at least in a training camp setting, which is all the evidence that we have so far, right? But they were dead last in motion, as an example, last year. And you can tell that that's going to be vastly different now. You've seen a lot of pre-snap motion out of the Eagles. You're seeing that the wide receivers, and they have very gifted wide receivers, of course, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, lining up in different spots, making things a little bit more complicated for the defense. And Hurts has looked really good, even though he's learning a new system. He hasn't thrown a single interception. And we're 10 practices deep in the training camp here. So he's looking efficient. He's looking really sharp. It looks like it's taking. And so there's encouraging signs that things are moving forward in a positive direction for the Eagles. But we're not in the season yet. They haven't faced a loss yet. They haven't faced multiple losses. You know, what does that all look like? Will any friction return? That's kind of a wait and see. And it's part of what makes this upcoming season for the Eagles so fascinating.
Not throwing an interception in, what is it now, like 2 weeks of training is insane, because, I mean, training camp is so – it's classically a time for quarterbacks to try new things and to push the boundaries. So for him to do that and still be efficient with the ball is impressive. Now, Tim, Philly made maybe the biggest splash offensive signing of the offseason, at least in terms of a skill player, in bringing in Saquon Barkley. How does he fit into this new offensive scheme Philadelphia is implementing?
He's going to be a big part of it. I mean, there's no doubt that he's going to be on the field a lot. And what we've seen so far is kind of, you know, the reputation that preceded him here. And it's different watching Barkley up close, because you, of course, you watch him on television and you follow his career at Penn State and with New York, and you know he's super productive. And then people have talked about, like, his build. But when you see him up close and, like, you know, just like the size of his legs and his lower body, there's like, he's just built different than almost any other football player that you would see. And he has, you know, speed to go with that power. So, like, when he's like running by you on the sideline, like, oh, that's different than what you normally see out of running backs. It gives you a different appreciation for, you know, how special Saquon Barkley is. And of course he comes into an offense with skill position players that are of a degree that he hasn't really experienced before. He's got A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert. He's got what's expected to be one of the best offensive lines in football. These are things that he hasn't really been surrounded by in his career to this point. And, you know, the sense is that he's feeling rejuvenated by this new start. And so the expectations are super high for Barkley. You know, we know that he is – you know, entering, I think it's year 7 in the NFL, and he's had injury history. So there's questions there, like, will it hold up? You know, will he sustain over the course of a year? Those things certainly can't be answered yet, but, you know, they're really excited about adding him in, you know, both as a runner and in the pass game to an offense that's already pretty loaded.
Well, Tim, last season, the defense wasn't immune to criticism either, and, you know, that's another area of change for the Eagles. They, you know, add some talent there, obviously bring in Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator. What are you expecting defensively from the Eagles?
Yeah, so there's question marks personnel-wise in that Fletcher Cox, the longtime staple at defensive tackle, retires. Hassan Reddick ends up moving on to the Jets. And so those are two of your most productive guys on a defense that you know, had its share of struggle, certainly last season. They bring in Bryce Huff, and then they draft Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, two guys in rounds one and two respectively to help with a defensive backfield that really had issues last season. The addition of Fangio's huge, at least in their mind. You know, they've been running some kind of carbon copy of his defense with multiple defensive coordinators over the last handful of seasons, and now they have like the original guy. And the response right now from the players has been positive. You know, they like that he's a kind of tell it like it is, straight shooter. Obviously, with a lot of resume in the NFL of accomplishment, and so that's going to be key. The defensive backfield looks much better, much faster, but there's still question marks about whether the front seven is going to be as effective. But I think what we can say for sure is that sort of the floor has been elevated with the presence of Fangio. I don't think this is going to be a bottom tier defense. I think we're talking about kind of like a mid-level defense that has a ceiling to grow higher. And with the offense that the Eagles have, you know, maybe that's enough.
Now, Tim, I can't believe I'm asking this about a coach that just went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But like, is there a do or die type of mantra for Fangio or for Sirianni entering this season? Like, is there a scenario in which he is not the Eagles coach in 2025?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, the way that last year ended, you know, it was rough. They delayed the end of season press conference last year as they were figuring out which way they wanted to go. I mean, Seth Wickersham and others reported that they were discussing the possibility of Belichick, and this was last season. Ultimately, they ended up bringing Sirianni back. They fired both coordinators. Once you fire both coordinators, you know, the safety net is basically out from under you. We know that the expectations are super high. Roseman has assembled maybe the best skill position group in Eagles history when you consider Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Saquon Barkley, Dallas Goedert. And so now, you know, the fan base is thinking, okay, here comes another Super Bowl run. And I can also tell you that through our reporting that there are close observers of the hiring cycle that already have Philadelphia sort of penciled as an opening, unless the Eagles have a very successful season. So no doubt about it. Like, the pressure is on Sirianni to perform this year.
Tim McManus, ESPN Eagles reporter. Check out his article up now on ESPN.com. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. And coming up, we'll give you the best and worst case scenarios for another NFC East team, the Washington Commanders. That's next. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio.
Finding the right employee for your company is tough. One wrong hire can be a major setback. You're not alone if you face this. A recent survey by Robert Half shows nearly half of hiring managers readily admit to making a bad hire. Luckily, there's a solution. With Robert Half's specialized recruiter's experience, combined with our award-winning AI, you can have the right skilled professional in place quickly. We understand what it takes to build winning teams because at Robert Half, we know talent. Discover how we can help at roberthalf.com/talent.
This is a PSA, or public sock announcement. Experts have declared Bombas socks as the best way to warm up chilly feet. These pairs are super cushy, soft, and designed for maximum coziness. Plus, for every pair purchased, another pair will be donated, so someone in need of essential clothing can stay warm this winter. Go to bombas.com/ESPNpod and use code ESPNpod for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ESPNpod and use code ESPNpod.
This is 180. ESPN Radio's NFL Two-A-Days, the Washington Commanders.
This is John Keim covering the Commanders. When you draft a quarterback second overall and have started 10 different quarterbacks since 2019, it's all about this position. So Jaden Daniels' development will be key during training camp. Their 9-member draft class will set the foundation for the future, but Daniels' performance will determine its overall success. The coaches want to see continued growth from Daniels and how he takes command of the offense. If all that happens, Washington will be quite pleased come late August.
It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM, Channel 80. Maria Marino and Marcel Louis Jacques filling in for Amber and Ian. All right, it is time for the best slash worst case for the Washington Commanders. And you know what? I'll start here with my best case scenario. We just heard about how important it is to have that crucial quarterback position figured out. So I say best case scenario for the Commanders is that Jaden Daniels has a CJ Stroud-like impact on his team this season. And you know what? It's so much easier said than done, man. I feel like what somebody like CJ Stroud was able to do, I think about Joe Burrow as well when he joined the Bengals. It's kind of rare, even for the tippy-top prospects, to like step onto a new team and be great right away. There's so many things that have to go right. It's got to be the right organization. It's got to be the right fit, the right personnel around you, the coaching. And so that's why I think it's so difficult to get these high draft picks right, because it's not just the person that you're drafting. It's the situation that you're drafting into. But best case, Jaden Daniels is able to have that immediate impact.
Yeah, and like our colleague John Kimes said, it really starts and ends with Jaden Daniels. I do like their second-round pick, Jazan Newton. He's somebody who, you know, obviously I'm the Dolphins reporter. He's somebody I thought the Dolphins could target in the first round. He is that type of talent. But this team does not move. It doesn't go anywhere if they did not hit on the Heisman winner, Jaden Daniels. You mentioned C.J. Stroud as a comp, you know, for best-case scenario. I'm going to go with one that hits a little closer to home, Maria, and say he has an RG3 type rookie year. You know, RG3, 2012, 3,200 passing yards, more than 800 rushing yards as well. I'm not saying that Jaden Daniels is going to run for 1,000 yards as a rookie. I think that's asking quite a bit, and I don't know that he has the frame to withstand that kind of punishment again and again and again. But I think that he is that type of player who, if you utilize the RPO and you utilize his ability to improvise, that he could be special. And unlike RG3, who had an okay supporting cast around him, you know, Pierre Garçon around. He's got some players here. Jaden Daniels has some players. It's not like the one that he had at LSU where he's throwing to first round picks and this and that. He's throwing to, you know, future Pro Bowlers. But they do have, obviously, Terry McLaurin. He's one of the more unheralded receivers in the NFL. Just consistent guy despite inconsistent quarterback play. They've got Jahan Dotson as well, who's really starting to come on as of late. And not to mention just his ability to run once again. It limits the need to have high-end superstar playmakers, but he does have some targets to throw to there in the passing game. And then when you look at Dan Quinn, a defensive-minded coach, one of the more respected defensive minds in the NFL over the past decade or so, he can turn this Washington defense around. That was, I mean, I'll just say it, embarrassing last year, particularly there against the pass. I think, you know, give him a year or so to get some pieces there to get his guys and implement his system. But I think the turnaround obviously starts right now. That being said, they play in a division with the Cowboys and Eagles where it's going to be hard to crack into that top two. I still think the best case scenario for Washington is that they finish third in the NFC East. Like, let's be real about where this team is. We don't have to fake optimism here. This segment is best case, worst case, not why your team will win the Super Bowl. This team's not going to win the Super Bowl. It's probably not going to make the playoffs. But if you see positive growth from them, you see positive strides, you see a future out of Jaden Daniels' rookie year, there's a scenario where you get third in the NFC East and you hang your hat up at the end of the day and you say, okay, you know, I'm proud of how this season turned out.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the division because, sadly, I have to get to the worst case part of the worst case scenario for the Commanders. And I would just say finishing last in the NFC East for the third year in a row, that is worst case scenario because, first of all, I think you need to see improvement. They had 4 wins last year. Their win total on ESPN bet at 6.5 right now. Like, I think worst case, though, they don't really improve much at all. Or it's not even that they're not improving. It's just that the Giants are better The Eagles are actually even better because they fell off toward the back half of last year. Maybe there's a little bit of regression from the Cowboys. They struggled, obviously, so much last year. But if they don't see an improvement and have some help from the other teams in the division, they're going to be right back where they were a season ago.
Oh, yeah. And Maria, I have an incredible stat for you here. Last season, 46.8% of opposing drives ended in points for the Washington Commanders. That's almost half the drives, their defensive drives, ended up with their opponent scoring. It was the worst mark in the NFL. The worst case scenario is that doesn't improve. The worst case scenario is that defense does not take a step forward, and this offense is putrid behind a rookie in Jaden Daniels who does not live up to his number two overall draft position. You know, basically, if that doesn't hit, if that fails, everything else is going to crumble around it. This is not a defense right now, even with Dan Quinn at the helm. This is not a defense right now that can sustain a bad offense, that can keep you in games with a bad offense. So you're right. The worst case scenario is they finish dead last in the NFC East. They're one of the worst teams, therefore, in the NFL. And they're picking in the top three once again, top two, top three once
Yikes.
Again.
They do have an easier schedule this year, so that should help. And, you know, I would say this too, like, again, wouldn't be surprised if there's some regression from the Cowboys or the Eagles. Giants are certainly a major question mark. So everything's kind of right there in front of them. Coming up, lots happening in camp with the Patriots. We're going to get into that next. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch. Whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
BetMGM presents Upping the Action with Jamie Foxx.
Yo, hockey's here, and it's colder than ice, like cold, cold. But with BetMGM, I can heat the game up with overs, unders, parlays, and moneyline, all from the comfort of my 102-degree hot tub. Now I'm really putting fire on the ice. This hockey season, download the BetMGM app.
And get up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. U.S. promotional offers not available in Nevada, New York, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. for New York. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY. Or text HOPE-NY 467-369. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. Puerto Rico, call 1-800-981-0023. West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brandon Ayuk not headed for New England.
New England had the parameters of a trade in place, but they weren't getting a great vibe with Brandon Ayuk and his agent. And the longer it went on, the worse they felt about it. And eventually they said, what are we doing here? Let's just focus in on the young receivers that we have.
Do you want to leave or not? And if you do want to leave, then pick between the teams that are interested. Because like the more you wait, after a while, guys are just going to go, never mind, we're cool.
Maria Marino and Marcel Louis-Jacques filling in for Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today. We're joined now by Mike Reese, ESPN Patriots reporter. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time.
Great to be with you, Maria and Marcel. How are we doing tonight?
Excellent. Looking forward to hearing from you, particularly about, you know, the news that we first saw this morning about the Patriots being out on Brandon Ayuk. Can you just sort of sum up why that is no longer an option for them?
Sure. They were aggressive, as I understand it, in their pursuit of him. And ultimately, I think they just got the feeling that maybe the interest wasn't reciprocated. And so at that point, they decided to remove themselves from the equation and sort of go with what they have and maybe not allow themselves to be, I don't want to say used per se, because that's sort of projecting that, but just to be, I don't think they felt like they were a realistic destination for him. They weren't getting the feeling from him that he wanted to be here.
So it kind of sounds like they're out on Brandon Ayuk, but it feels like they're out on him because he was out on them.
I think that's thank you, Marcel. See, you put it in such better words than I could put it in. And I think that's well said. And it's funny, in an off season when everyone's been asking the question, what's it been like to go from Bill Belichick to Gerard Mayo as head coach? I think back to something Bill Belichick would always say. It takes two sides, you know, to make a deal come together.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's kind of because I think the numbers that you reported, they offered him a 4-year deal worth, it was $32 million average annual. It would make him the second highest paid receiver in the NFL. What is it about the current state of the New England Patriots to where you think Brandon Ayuk wouldn't want to be a part of that?
Well, so, Marcel, I can't obviously speak for him. I think
right.
Playing for a team, right, that was not far from winning the Super Bowl, and he'd be coming to a team that I would say is pretty far away right now, you know, from being in that point. This is a rebuilding team right now. So I think that's probably – I mean, he's got a pretty good situation there, and if he doesn't stay there, it sounds like he had told our colleague Ryan Clark on the Pivot podcast that – he liked the Steelers, you know, as a possibility. So I think probably that's probably where I would go, Marcel, just in terms of it's not just, you know, we always say it's usually about the money, but in this case, it sounds like it's a little bit about more than just the money for him.
Talking with Mike Reese, ESPN Patriots reporter here on ESPN Radio, and switching gears a little bit, you talked about obviously this new era for the Pats, new head coach, they draft a quarterback in Drake May, but a bit of a quarterback battle going on, if you will. Where do you think that stands?
So the way they set this up, Maria, was they knew they were going to draft a quarterback at 3, ends up being Drake May, but they wanted to set it up so there was no pressure to play whoever they ended up drafting before they felt like that player was ready. And so that's why they went out and signed Jacoby Brissett, 48 career starts in the NFL, to be their starting quarterback, you know, until they felt like the young quarterback was ready. And so they've been through 11 training camp practices, and I think I've watched them all, and I think most that have seen it would probably agree that Drake May to this point hasn't done anything that would make you think the gap would close for them to consider, you know, starting Drake on day one and altering the sort of course that they set by signing Jacoby Brissett in the first place. Now, maybe that changes. Like maybe tomorrow night, you know, in the preseason opener, we see something we haven't seen and it starts an ascent. So that's why, of course, we'll be watching closely. But as of now, like I'd say Jacoby Brissett still entrenched as the number one.
Mike, maybe no, not even a maybe, no reporter up in the Northeast is as plugged into the Patriot way as you are. Obviously, Gerard Mayo is a Bill Belichick. He's a former player for Bill. Have you seen remnants of the Patriot way even as Gerard Mayo takes over? Or what differences between the Belichick era to now have you noticed over the past few months?
So it's a mix, and here's one example. You know, the other day, we're all gathered around to talk to Gerard Mayo before training camp practice, and we're going to ask him about Brandon Ayuk and the reports out there that the 49ers are, you know, willing to listen to, you know, offers and that the Patriots and 49ers have parameters of a deal in place. And Gerard Mayo gets to the, you know, the interview podium, Marcel, and he says, one thing I did learn from Bill is that I don't talk about players on other teams. So let me go ahead and say that now, you know, so he'll take some of those things from Bill Belichick, but then let me take you like call it 8 questions later. When I ask him, Marcel, I say, what's the plan in the preseason opener for Drake May? And he says, Drake is going to play in the game. Everyone that's healthy is going to play. And he looked at me and he goes, that's more information than you've ever got before. And I said to him, I said, well, how much is he going to play? And then Gerard goes, now you're pushing it. You know, so it was,
you gotta ask.
Have a little fun with it, right?
Well, Mike, I mean, you're obviously a nice guy, so you might be sugarcoating it a little bit, but he at least sounds like he's giving you something, a bit more at the podium, maybe at least dropping some humor in there.
Definitely, Maria. And I think like so that's from the media perspective. And I would say from the team perspective, which is probably more important, right? Like some of the changes, like they'll play music throughout the practice. And I think, you know, even Gerard himself has mentioned it's a small thing, but like, right, like it brings the energy level up. And so I think, you know, that's one aspect of many that has looked different from what we've seen in the past.
Well, on a trickier note, we've been hearing reports about, outside linebacker Matthew Judon and wanting an upgraded contract. What is the state of the relationship right now between Judon and the Pats?
So that's all true. I mean, Matthew Judon has said as much. He doesn't feel like his contract, which calls for him to earn a base salary this year of $6.5 million, is reflective of his value. He did say that he will play under that contract if he has to. He's not willing to give back any money. But he's made it clear that, you know, that's not his preference. And so he hasn't always participated in practice. Last week, they had their first full pads practice, and I think there was a miscommunication of some sort where, he wasn't out in full pads. I think that was a surprise to some people that thought maybe he would be out in full pads, led to a conversation with Gerard Mayo, looked like it was animated, but was it animated? You know, Matthew Judon says maybe it wasn't, but so there's been back and forth. I do believe there's sort of ongoing, I don't know if it's ongoing conversation, but I would say the door isn't closed to try to rectify the situation, but they haven't made it there at this point. And I don't expect them to play tomorrow night in the preseason opener.
Mike, I've been pretty highly critical of the Patriots, skill players, their weapons on offense. We're not that far removed from them drafting, what was it, 3 running backs in the same draft, if I'm not exaggerating. They took a couple receivers this time around, and Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. We heard from Adam Schefter earlier or late last night that, you know, they're excited about this young group of playmakers. What has been your assessment of New England's pass catchers, you know, the ones they've added in the offseason, and also how the ones they already had have developed?
So, Marcel, they give themselves, a young core to grow with Drake May. I think that's important to them. Like, they draft Jalen Polk out of Washington in the second round, Javon Baker out of Central Florida in the fourth round. Those receivers signed for the next 4 years. Drake May signed for the next 4 years with a fifth-year option. So I think that's part of the strategy of the team. Polk has had a good camp. He's competitive. I'd say he's not like the most fast receiver. He's not the biggest receiver. Very good hands, good route runner, competitive in tight window situations. Baker's more of a downfield guy, has made some big plays. They got Pop Douglas, the second-year player in the slot. He's really shifty. So I think those three give him a young core. They got K.J. Osborne, who they signed from the Vikings to a one-year deal. I think he'll be there. It's going to be a group that I don't think there's a defensive coordinator that would look at the receiving core and say, we have to take that one guy away because he's that special. So I think they're going to be a group that has to win with the sort of totality of everyone chipping in to make it balanced and hard for the defense to defend sort of everyone across the board, if that makes sense.
Mike Reese, ESPN Patriots reporter. It's been an absolute joy speaking with you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great rest of the show.
Thank you. And enjoy the preseason game tomorrow. Patriots taking on the Panthers. And coming up, a lineup change for the women and a focus on not getting put to sleep for the men. We're going to get into Team USA Olympic basketball next. It's Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio.
Ah, fall Saturdays. The air is crisp. The game is on. Your friends are here, and you're outside on grill duty. The Home Depot knows missing the game is not an option. Thankfully, the Traeger Timberline XL Grill is here to help you play defense and make the most of every Saturday. First up, we've got fans to feed, and the Timberline XL is a real crowd pleaser. It can bake, smoke, sear, fry, and saute, so you can feed everyone at the watch party. Whether you want sweet, tangy ribs, jalapeno poppers with a smoky kick, grilled street corn, or some classic buffalo wings, this utility player can do it all. And with Wi-Fire tech and the Traeger app, you can monitor your smoker temp, meat probes, and pellet levels all from the comfort of your couch. So you can watch the game, not the grill, and never miss a moment. Defend your game time with Traeger and the Home Depot. How doers get more done. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like UNTUCKit or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business making selling, and for shoppers, buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling, on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout UNTUCKit uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/network.
USA men's basketball off to the semifinals in Paris, knocking off Brazil 122-87.
As they have throughout this summer, Team USA responded to Kerr and came out with an aggressive mindset, building a huge early lead and never looking back.
We just have to keep doing what we're doing, which is defending at a really high level. We know that's what wins in FIBA. You know, keep the possessions even, so you know we're not giving up a lot of extra possessions and then allow our talent to take over.
Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Maria Marino and Marcel Louis-Jacques filling in for Amber Wilson and Ian Fitzsimmons. Marcel, you've been watching Olympic basketball or what?
I've been trying. You know, I'm more interested in watching the women's team dominate for the time being. You know, I just saw us. Can I say us? I know, yeah. I'm not part of the team, but you know I'm part of the country that yeah. helps cheer for. You know, I can say us.
I don't like, hate
this
it.
Isn't corny, right? It's the Olympics. It's I watched us beat up on Nigeria. I'm looking forward to the men's upcoming game against Serbia, though. Even you know, with or without Joel Embiid, I think it is kind of funny. You know, if he does indeed end up not playing with this ankle injury, it is hilarious that even in international competition, he still manages to duck any competition against Jokic. Some things just never change.
Look, there's all kinds of questions that are fair, mind you, about whether Joel Embiid should even be participating in these Olympics. And it's hard because obviously you don't want to rob someone of that honor, you know, to play for your country. And, you know, it's a big deal. But at the same time, you could certainly make the case that given his injury history as recently as this past NBA season, it would be, you know, you would be justified in being like, hey, we should just not have you play right now.
Yeah, it's kind of a bad look, right? Like the optics aren't there. And that, this is why it's kind of why Kawhi Leonard dropped out from Team USA earlier this summer. If you're a guy who struggles to play 82 games year in and year out, and you know, I'm not expecting you to be just an absolute Iron Man, but like if you're consistently missing 18, 20, 25 even games per season, it is kind of a weird look. You know, if I'm a Clippers fan, it's a weird look seeing Kawhi all of a sudden string 10 games in a row together of perfect health. When it's like, dude, Where were you when we needed you? Or in Joel Embiid's case, you know, the Sixers fans are looking at him, you know, struggle. He wasn't even in the MVP conversation this year because he wasn't eligible to be. He missed too many games. So you're watching that, and now all of a sudden you're healthy enough to play in the Olympics? And then you had the audacity to get hurt in the Olympics? Yeah, I would probably be a little frustrated. And like you said, like, it's the Olympics. It's once every 4 years. There's no guarantee that you get more than one. Right, like, there's no guarantee you get to play in more than one Olympic Games, so you want to let guys live their life, but like at the same time, you know, the Olympics don't pay you like that. I think what gold medalists get, it's like $30,000 in for the U.S., which is a lot. It's a lot of money all at once, but it is nothing compared to the, what is it, James? Help me out here. $40-50 million a year that he gets from the Sixers.
Yeah, no,
I mean it's something like that. It's a lot.
It's you're not. I don't think money is the main motivation. But let's look ahead now, because the U.S. will have to rematch with Serbia tomorrow, and you may recall they had to play Serbia in group play, ended up winning 110-84. Now, my observation during this game, Marcel, was Nikola Jokic, to me, in that game, I think it's just because the U.S. is so stacked, and Jokic obviously doesn't have the same overall, you know, caliber of teammates, but like, he did not look like a three-time NBA MVP to me. And I know he's coming off a game against Australia in which he was superhuman, beat Australia by five, did Serbia, in overtime. So Jokic had to played 39 minutes in that game. And remember, the games over in Paris are, you know, 10-minute quarters, whatever. But, like, there's a question as to whether Serbia might be kind of using these sleep tactics where maybe they didn't show their full hand to Team USA in their first meeting in group play. But, like, does it even matter?
I think it does matter. I think if you're the U.S. men's team has been humbled enough over the past, wow, I can't believe Athens was 20 years ago, but yeah, 20 years, to where you can't sleepwalk anymore. You can't just say we're NBA superstars, you know, it doesn't matter anywhere we go, we're cooking whoever, you know, roll the ball out and we're winning. It's not like that anymore. The rest of the world is caught up, including Serbia, who has somebody who's, I don't care how he looked before, he's in contention for the honor of best player in the world. Yeah, I don't care if it's league, domestic, international. Nikola Jokic is one of the best players, if not the best player in the world, and he proves that year in and year out, season in, season out for the Nuggets. So this is not a scenario in which, you know, you could say, well, you know, we beat them by 26 last time. We can do it again. It's hard to beat a team twice. It's hard to blow out a team twice, and it's hard to blow out Serbia twice. So I promise you they're going to come out with a bigger chip on their shoulder than they did in group play.
Well, obviously, and you know, this is elimination time, and this is winner go home. But just in case you're wondering, in the first meeting, Embiid did start, only played 11 minutes though, had 4 points. So it's not like they necessarily needed Embiid in that particular matchup. In fact, you know, sometimes I like when they get a little bit more dynamic, a little bit smaller. I mean, look, Embiid, it's great. He can stretch the floor. He actually nailed a few three-pointers in the USA's last win. So that gives you a lot of value. But I don't necessarily think, you know, his presence is going to make or break whether, you know, Team USA can contain Nikola Jokic and Serbia.
No, I mean, as long as LeBron and Kevin Durant are both working like they did. I mean, KD was 8 of 9, 5 for 5 from the three-point line, 23 points. It's incredible because right now on this team, you know, with this many playmakers and rebounds around him, they're basically saying, KD, go get a bucket. KD, go score. That's one track minded. That is the only thing you have to do. Obviously, he can do a little more than that. But they're saying you can just be a scorer here. You don't have to do a little bit of everything. You could just go get buckets. And that is an unstoppable formula when you're talking about the all-time leading scorer in men's basketball history. But when you look at that stat sheet, you know, Team USA shot 56% from the three-point line, 18 of 32 from the three-point line. Serbia was 24%, 25%.
Right.
That's probably not going to be replicated again. They'll probably be a little hotter, and USA might be a little colder. I don't want them to sleepwalk through this.
That's true.
Like, you have to take it seriously. It doesn't matter to me who's on the court. If we could lose to Puerto Rico 20 years ago and get roasted by Carlos Arroyo, with all due respect, Carlos, anything can happen.
Well, look, despite some early criticisms of Steve Kerr, which I think were maybe overblown, I believe in Steve Kerr. I think they're going to be just fine, and they will not be sleepwalking. But coming up, we'll talk more Eagles on Amber and Ian, ESPN Radio.